So much. Thanks for the opportunity to speak to you. And this will be a more modest in scope talk. I'm going to be focusing on processes or an aspect of biology that's pretty well agreed to be a process. That's development. And what I'm going to do is investigate development from the perspective of stem cell biology, the field that I've thought about the most, and try to expand from a stem cell-centered picture to a broader notion of development. So I have an idea about thinking about development that I think is a processual view, but I'm not committed in this talk to defending a revolutionary perspective. This is something that I think could come out in the discussion. I'm not committed so much to a revolution as to articulating things that I think are going on in the practices of stem cell biology and just haven't been articulated much by philosophers. So I'm going to assume that it doesn't require a lot of argument to claim that development is a process. Now, in the broadest possible sense, biological development refers, in fact, to all the processes of change in organisms. We'll just, that's an assumption as well, that it's an organism-focused process, but all the changes in organisms from birth to death, and that, in fact, all the changes is too broad. Every organism undergoes myriad changes in its lifetime, and particular ones are very plastic. So as a first pass at defining what the phenomenon of development is, it would be the subset of those changes that are directional and robust across members of a species. That's just a rough first pass. Now, in multicellular organisms, development includes, this is an unusually complicated process of development, but all organisms undergo them. In multicellular organisms, development includes the transformation of a single cell, the start, to a multicellular embryo, and then to a mature organism. Most organisms, strictly speaking, are one cell and stay that way, but phenomena of development tend to be articulated in terms of multicellular organisms, an example of one of the biases we've talked about earlier. So we have a great many models or theories, if you like, about parts of that process of development. And some of them are extremely detailed. But to my knowledge, we don't have any model that encompasses the transitions between a single cell to a bunch of cells to a whole organism. We don't have any kind of overall inclusive model of development. We have a lot of very specific partial ones, but there's been no general picture. And so what I'm going to try to do is articulate a framework for such a general picture that I don't think has been articulated yet. Now, one reason for that epistemic gap, plausibly, is the emphasis traditionally on biological entities rather than processes as objects of inquiry. I'm not committed to this claim, but at least as a first pass, it seems like perhaps one of the reasons that we don't have says clear and inclusive an account of development is precisely that long-standing focus on entities rather than processes in biology. And Evelyn Fox Keller has argued something like this, actually, with her criticisms focused primarily on the concept of the gene as a well-defined biological entity. What I'm going to do is propose an inclusive model of development that's centered on stem cells rather than genes, and in which entities figure as embedded within multiple layers or strata of processes. So it's layers of interactive networks that I'm going to try to articulate. And the central idea, the first point that I'll argue, is that stem cells are best represented as cell lineage trees. This is a special case of a network model. The second point I want to argue is that stem cell lineages can link cell and organism layers within an overall developmental process. So the plan of the talk, and I'll try to watch the time and not run too far over, there's three parts that it'll fall into. And in the first, I'm going to argue that first point, that stem cells should be understood as lineage tree processes rather than what might be the more straightforward interpretation, they're a special case of a particular type of biological entity, the cell. Seems like an obvious thing. A stem cell is a kind of cell. I'm going to argue that, in fact, they're not, or at least not in the way that cells have been traditionally understood as biological entities. And in the second part of the talk, I'll extend that lineage tree model to include the organism. So building outward from a cell lineage model to a model that encompasses the transition between cell and organism. And I'm going to do that by looking very closely at stem cell experiments that are designed to reveal aspects of organismal organization. And the last part, this is the Roman numeral number 4 in the way that I've outlined it here. The last part of the three substantive parts of the talk, I'm going to extend the model even further. This is the really sketchy, speculative part, trying to encompass all of the layers of interacting networks that are implicated in the process of development. So the process of development is primary. Entities can be distinguished within it. I have a multi-layered model for doing that. And so that third part of the talk is the most speculative, probably also the part where I'm most likely to run out of time. That might or not. Might be a strength or not. So to start with, this is the first part of the argument, is why should we think of stem cells as what I've called lineage processes rather than as individual cells? A cell is arguably our most unambiguous example of a biological individual, an entity in the traditional sense that engages in processes like reproduction, development, metabolism, and evolution. We have a very clear kind of structural criterion for thinking of cells as entities. They're separated from the environment by an enclosing membrane. We've got a nice, pretty unambiguous topological criterion of individuality. Now, of course, that doesn't exist out of time. And the signals from the environment are passing across the membrane all the time. Just because we can distinguish an entity from its environment, there isn't a strict barrier between the entity and environment. But we can say pretty definitively when we have one cell or two or none. We have really clear criteria for cell reproduction by division. Cells reproduce so that the process is finished when the membranes have pinched off to separate. So we have a kind of topological, spatial criterion for cell individuality. And this is articulated in terms of cell theory. This was cutting edge science in the mid-19th century, not so much now. It tends to recede into the background, but it's still in fairly wide use in understanding cells and how they work. So one of the basic background assumptions of much of the cell biology, cell and molecular biology, is just cells reproduce by binary division. An individual cell's existence begins with a cell division event and ends either with a second event that produces two offspring, no more original cell, or cell death and no offspring. And generations of cells are linked by reproductive division form a lineage. That's the concept that I'm going to be talking about the most. Now, the idea of the cell is itself an abstraction. There are many, many kinds of cell that are distinguished from one another by different molecular, biochemical, morphological, and functional characteristics. So it's commonplace in biology that cell traits are not continuously distributed, they clump in these fairly robust cell types. There are several hundred that make up the body of a multicellular organism. And so the building blocks of multicellular organisms are typically, again, considered in this entity-based, structural-based approach. These are the different types of cells: neurons, skin cells, blood cells, bone cells, et cetera, et cetera. And the first way to think about, sort of the most intuitively obvious way to think about a stem cell would be as just another type of cell. They're another kind of entity with their distinctive phenotype. And what I'm going to argue is that they are not like this. Now, one might go further and argue along the lines that John Dupre has, that no cells are like this. I'm not making that argument, although what I say is not incompatible with it. I'm going to argue that if any cells are structural entities in this individual, biological individual way, stem cells are not. Stem cells are not a type of cell like the others I've just mentioned, with its own set of structural characteristics and patterns of gene expression that are bounded from their environment by the enclosing membrane. A stem cell has, you know, if we pick it out, they have membranes and morphology and patterns of gene expression, but they're not defined as stem cells by having those things. Stem cells are defined by abilities that implicate generations of cells. They're defined by abilities that involve a cell lineage. And the form and structure of that lineage, which is itself arguably the property of stemness, is greatly influenced, if not entirely determined, by the environment. Interactions between the cell and its environment, that is physical, chemical, cellular, a complex environment. So these conclusions, these bullet points I've identified out here, they follow from two things: the general definition of stem cell, an abstraction in itself, and the specific experimental methods that are used to individuate stem cells in practice. So I'm going to talk about each of those two points, the bottom there, one and two, separately, and then put them together. So the general definition of stem cell, this has actually changed quite a lot over time. There is now a pretty well-accepted general definition, and that's the one that I'm going to use in this argument. They're functionally defined, or a stem cell is functionally defined as having two capacities: the capacity to self-renew and the ability to generate differentiated cells. That is, it can make more cells like itself via cell division, and give rise to more specialized, more differentiated cells, cells that are further along a developmental process. So a stem cell in the first instance is defined not by its structure or traits that it has as an entity, but by what it's capable of doing. Now, that may be all well and good, but that general definition plays a very limited role in actual stem cell research. It's used primarily to communicate with the public or to introduce the idea of a stem cell to a beginner audience. No one actually studies stem cells as defined here. The basic idea, I think, is important, but to investigate the concept of a stem cell, we need to look a little bit more closely at how they are identified in practice. And stem cell researchers in practice don't study stem cells in this sense. They study one or more of the different varieties of stem cell, and there are a great many of these. What I'm showing here, ESC, is they're mostly identified by little acronyms. Embryonic stem cell, hematopoietic, blood-forming stem cell. NSC is neural stem cell. Induced pluripotent stem cell is number four. These are actually only the most common of the most coarse-grained classification of kinds of stem cell. There's actually no clear-cut way of individuating them as types of things. You could get a much more finer-grained one by different strains of stem cell. That would probably be closer to scientific practice. But even if we use the most coarse-grained classification, we have tens to dozens of different kinds of stem cell. Now, adding to the difficulty of making any progress philosophically in making sense of this, stem cell biology, as I've argued elsewhere, is an experiment-driven science in that it lacks anything recognizable to philosophers as a traditional theory or general model. That general definition of stem cell is about the only thing you will see in the science like this. You go straight from that to the details of particular experiments. So stem cell biology works in concrete experimental methods and their living results rather than in abstractions. Our only access to stem cells is via experiment. And I think that's one of the reasons that this field has tended to be somewhat opaque to philosophers. There's very, very little abstraction that goes into the scientific practices themselves. And what I'm going to do, what I've argued in earlier work and what I'm going to do here, is to try to extract philosophical claims out of the concrete experimental methods, which is where the action is in this branch of science. Stem cell biology isn't unique in this respect, it's just the field that I happen to investigate. There's a lot of areas of science that I think philosophers have tended to overlook, largely because if they're experiment driven, there's less conceptual apparatus to start working with. But I think, in fact, if you look at the details of experimental methods in stem cell biology and put those together with the ideas in the general definition, one can actually explicate from this some very important ideas about development and individuality. And that's the basis of my argument about stem cells being lineage processes. That's the groundwork for that. So, to look, again, this is a philosopher's generalization. Scientists, you can see by my cute little cartoon there, the experiments that aim to identify stem cells have a pretty robust basic structure. These are only the experiments aimed at identifying and characterizing the different types of stem cells, not all the experiments that happen in the field. That's much more diverse. But the pattern is actually very simple. Cells are extracted from an organismal source, and they're put in a new context, a new environment, and then candidate stem cell characters are measured in that first environment. There's that little character C, little petri dish. They're not always dishes, but often they are. Those cells are then moved to another environment, and then capacities for differentiation can be realized. That's where things sort of diffract out to maybe a whole range of different environments, but at least some other environment where you can see what they turn into. What do they become? And then the last stage, you measure the characters of differentiated cells. Not stem cells anymore. Stem cells are gone. So this is how stem cells are individuated as biological entities, via experiments with this basic design. The technical details vary enormously, and I've just lumped them into in vivo and in vitro methods. But there's tons more diversity than is reflected here. But the basic strategy is just moving cells from one context to another. And the famous example of this, to make it a little more concrete and closer to scientific practice, if there's any type of stem cell people have heard of, it's human embryonic stem cells, which have been well studied from an ethical point of view. They're derived from early human embryos, so there's an organismal source. They're produced by removing part of that embryo's inner layer. So you wait, this is all, again, an abstraction of an embryo out of context, but this is all done in vitro. Wait till it reaches that stage of differentiation where there's an inner cell mass. Take some of those cells out and put them in cell culture. in that environment, some of those cultured cells divide to produce colonies with certain traits, the flat round shape, and they have high telomerase activity and a growing list of gene expression patterns. And the ones with the features that are wanted, primarily self-renewal, are selected for further in vitro culture. You divide them and keep adding what they call a passaging. Grab some of those colonies out, put them in a whole new set of plates, and that cycle can be repeated indefinitely to generate new colonies. That's what produces an immortal human cell line. So by this experimental design, self-renewal is assured. Any cell that goes through that experimental design, they're selected to be self-renewing. So self-renewal is just part of the experimental method. Any cell that goes through this process is going to be capable of renewing itself so that more colonies are made to be picked off into this process. But that isn't really what's important about them from a scientific point of view. The self-renewal just means you can make a lot of them. Their differentiation ability, their developmental potential, is what anchors most of the scientific interest in stem cells. And that's determined by moving them to another environment, an environment that's conducive to development along some pathway or other. So immediately thinking about the traits that make stem cells significant lands us into the question of pathways of development rather than, again, stable entities and states. They're moved into environments that encourage development along particular pathways, and then the results are compared with ordinary differentiated cells, bone marrow, nerve cells, heart muscle, pancreatic, et cetera. And there's a pronounced medical focus of what are the kinds of cell types that are of interest. They tend to be ones that there is a thought there could be some medical significance to making artificially cells of this type. So this is the first pass at how human embryonic stem cells, a version of something like this basic method, applies to all of them. Every stem cell or type of stem cell has a characteristic potency or potential. That means there's a range of cell types to which it can give rise. Human embryonic stem cells are pluripotent, meaning that's a shorthand for saying they can produce all the cell types in the adult organism's body. They're not the only cells of that kind, but various stem cells have that ability, and that's a prized one. But not all stem cells have the same potency. There's a whole array of different grades of potential. But it's not just the grade that matters, but exactly what the cell types are. For pluripotency, it's all of them, so they're all going to have the same specificity. But it's much more common for a stem cell to have a tendency to produce one or a subset of some of the cells that make up the body. So, putting together these features of the methods used to individuate stem cells, what I've done is explicate the stem cell concept in terms of a simple abstract model with four elements. This is nothing like what a stem cell biologist would do. That's a philosopher's intervention. Just the general features of analyzing the concept of a stem cell. There's an origin, an interval of persistence, component traits, and a developmental process. And I'll go pretty quickly through these and then delve into the implications of this for calling stem cells lineage processes. But the basic idea that there's a process involved and a lineage should be emerging pretty directly. So the origin, as a point I already made earlier, every stem cell is part of or descended via cell division from part of exactly one multicellular organism. So this is hinting at that second part of the argument, actually. They're not only cellular entities. They're an entity that involves the idea of an organism right at the outset. And in fact, the name of a particular stem cell variety is usually in reference to its source organism, or else to the part of the body that it's going to generate, blood-forming epithelial muscle. It's one or the other. There's either the source or the outcome that are the way that stem cells are actually named. So the features of the organismal source that are most important are the species, the developmental stage, and exactly where in it, its context, from where the stem cells are taken. We saw that with the human embryonic type. All stem cells have that kind of origin. It's just a different location. Now the lifespan, that second point, the interval of persistence, that determines the lifespan of a stem cell lineage. It's constrained by the initiating stem cell's self-renewal capacity. And that duration varies widely across different kinds of stem cells. Again, the extreme case would be sort of no upper limit. You could keep self-renewing indefinitely. That's the immortal cell lines. But most stem cells have some limit there, and when self-renewal ceases, the population will steadily deplete through differentiation and cell death, in accordance with the criteria I noted earlier. And eventually all the descendant populations leave. You can think of the soma in general has that finitude built into, it's attached to the interval of persistence of self-renewal. The self-renewal capacity of a stem cell determines that. Now, within this those descendant populations, you don't just get the self-renewal, you get an array of different cell types that emerge in the course of a developmental process. And this is that third point, I've labeled it here as component traits. This is the way that different positions within the cell lineage are identified. One thing that sets stem cells apart from a regular record of cell genealogy is the stages are not distinguished in terms of all the cell division events. You can do that. You can track all the cell division events that go into making an organism. But stem cell lineages don't really follow that pattern. They follow the different hierarchy of appearance of traits along a developmental pathway. And so thinking about what is ensuing from a stem cell, you've got a whole set of characters that can be measured in whatever environment you have. There's the rates of cell division, the size and shape of the cell, its expression level of particular genes. It's a whole long list of different cell traits. And these different, the values of these different traits can be distributed among different positions within a lineage. And this goes into, I think, the conception of what a stem cell in fact is. Because what's important is not only that it can keep making more stem cells, but what they turn into. What they turn into is understood in terms of this transition of in traits and characters of the cell leading toward developmental termini, and that leads us to that fourth and final point. The whole idea of lineage is ordered by a developmental process. So the different positions that are distinguished by pointless characters number three are arranged in order of this developmental process. So these four elements correspond to variables that can take different values, distinguishing the different varieties of stem cells. The idea is all of the varying kinds of a stem cell can be understood in this unified framework in terms of different values of what I've identified as these separate variables. And you can classify stem cells in terms of what I, the model based in the sense of this four variable model, and find a kind of unified general way of thinking about all the experimental variants of stem cells. The details of the experimental procedure fix the values of those variables. And so it's a classification of stem cells that's model-based, but in a way that ties very directly to the experiments that individuate the cells. And the way that I've been thinking about this most recently, there's my little experimental diagram there, the way I've been thinking about this most recently is that the specification of the values of these four variables amounts to a constraint on the space of possible lineage tree structures associated with a given stem cell. And this is usually the way, if stem cell researchers represent their results in an abstract model at all, it tends to take the form of a lineage. They don't always bother. But if they do, it's usually in the form of a lineage. It might be a really simple one where you've got an endpoint and an origin point, but often it's a more elaborate one. The thought is that all the stem cells can be understood as one or more possible tree structures. So experiments are constraints on the space of possible lineage trees that are associated with a given stem cell. And again, this is a philosopher's intervention, not something that stem cell biologists have done. But a lineage model has a lot of interesting features. A lineage tree is a kind of network. It's a structure of nodes linked by edges. And in a lineage, the nodes are like represent biological entities related by reproduction. And the edges are directed from parent to offspring. That's the generic conception of a lineage. In a stem cell lineage, all of the network's paths originate from a single node. That's the stem cell. So the stem cell is really a position within this abstract structure, the lineage. And the paths terminate in specialized cell types. That's the endpoints of whatever pathways of development are of interest. And the way branch points are distributed among the stages, leading from that initiation point to the terminus, that determines a particular tree structure. So you can think of any given process of development as producing a cell lineage tree with a particular structure. And any given stem cell population, any given stem cell population of stem cells or type of stem cells can be characterized in terms of the features of that corresponding tree, the structure of the cell lineage it indicates. And I've broken down that developmental process D in terms of these further variables that specify those features of the tree lineage structure. I won't go into the details there because I don't want to spend as long on something that is clearly structural. So this is the next part of the argument, is why this doesn't just turn into another version of an entity view. That's the part I'm moving here. So this is the way that I've been starting to think about how to abstractly conceive of stem cells in relation to all the details of their experiment, the myriad of experimental methods used to identify them, and find a kind of unity here. So you have termini that are specified by the tests of potential. What are the developmental termini? It depends on the experiment. What are you measuring for? The depth of the hierarchy is determined by what possible traits are included in the discussion of the experiment. Quite often, the arrangement of branch points is left unspecified by experiments. Different experiments will more or less precisely specify this. So it makes sense to think about stem cell experiments as identifying some subset of possible lineage trees. So they're usually constrained but not uniquely specified by the methods that are used. And you can map different kinds of stem cell then onto regions within the space of possible lineage tree structures. So it's really closely tied to the details of experiments. This is an extremely structural way of understanding stem cells. And so the first thing I wanted to talk about here is how this is not simply another defense of a structural entity view. Instead of cells as entities, what I've argued is that the notion of a stem cell can't be just an isolated individual cell, but instead, they're not individual units of life separated from an environment by an enclosing membrane in the way that cells are traditionally understood. A stem cell is the initiation point of a cell lineage. It's defined by its developmental and reproductive abilities within that lineage. So the idea of a stem cell presupposes that of a lineage and a developmental process. Now, as I mentioned earlier, this whole approach, though, probably looks extremely structural. It looks like I've just abstracted away from the process. I took that notion of a developmental process and then further analyzed it into these multiple variables that can characterize a tree structure. And I want to argue now that this should not be taken. You could, I think, consistently interpret all of what I've said as an extremely structural way, an extremely traditional entity way. Instead of a cell, I've just got this lineage structure. But that, I think, would actually take us further away from the way that stem cells are understood in practice. So the substantivist impression, the idea that a cell lineage is a structure, I think it holds only insofar as we take the tree structures in isolation or consider them abstractly. And that seems like second nature to philosophers. It may be so obvious it doesn't need saying, but of course when you've analyzed things in this way, you've got the lineage structure that's separate from the context and that should be understood statically rather than dynamically. But that doesn't cohere at all with the practices of stem cell biology. I actually think the appearance of a structure and an entity in isolation is the kind of thing philosophers would assume and the experimental scientists would not. Stem cell research focuses on the details of experiment and the living materials that are created or altered thereby. And so if we look at the way lineages are understood in practice, the representations will lend themselves often to a structuralist or substantivist interpretation. But the practices of stem cell biology remain really close to the processes of development. And I want to bring that back into the picture in more specific ways here. So for the first instance, a stem cell can't be identified with the lineage structure. You can't think of the stem cell as just equivalent to the lineage structure. It occupies a position within the lineage, and its position is very distinctive. It's the initiation point for all the paths. So this is the definition I've put forward. To be a stem cell is to be the origin of a cell lineage, either actually or potentially. Now, stem cells are defined by their processes of self-renewal and differentiation. And it's these processes that generate the lineage. This is the view that I want to put forward. Instead of a kind of abstract structural picture, we should think of this as a processual notion. It's a generative notion. The stem cell is the starting point of a lineage, and the concept of a stem cell implicates that lineage, but it also implicates the stem cell as this generative source. If you think of stem cells as simply entities, occupying a position within a static lineage, you end up with a lot of puzzles because those entities, the stem cells, are destroyed by the processes that define them. So as I mentioned earlier, and this is in accordance with the criteria of individuation for cells, if we think of stem cells in the way I'm arguing you should not, as these static entities that are part of a fixed lineage, you end up with a lot of puzzles in thinking about what on earth is going on. Because to self-renew is to produce either one or two cells that resemble the parent. The parent ceases to exist upon splitting. If you think of a stem cell as a single individual entity that self-renews, that defining character, that one defining capacity, actually causes it to cease to exist. No entity persists in the self. The cellular entity is gone after reproduction. To differentiate, it's even more obvious. To differentiate is to become something other than a stem cell. So a stem cell either transforms into something else or it divides to produce offspring that exhibit that transformation. Either way, when the process of self-renewal has happened and the process of differentiation has happened, there's no more starting entity. That cell that was started with is gone, in accordance with the criteria that we use to individuate them. Stem cells, by definition, make way for their descendants. So if we think about it in the traditional single static entity way, as just occupying the single position within the lineage, you end up with an entity that just, by definition, destroys itself. You know, stem cells are essentially generative. Now, I think if we think about them instead as active initiators of a process, as generative points that start the lineage, they produce other cells that are both like and unlike themselves. So a more active processual conception of the stem cell doesn't end up with this sort of weird contradiction of the very processes that define it cause it to cease to exist. I'm not going to say as far as there's no way around that ontological puzzle, but it seems like we help ourselves to just a lot of puzzles and problems that have to be overcome with an entity, a static entity conception of stem cells that are avoided if we think of them as these initiation points of a generative lineage. So I think that way to avoid the conceptual traps is to think about stem cells as embedded in a developmental process. They're a special case, they're the initiation points of a cell developmental process, and that developmental process takes the form of a lineage. Another related argument, but a distinct one I think, is that that property of being a stem cell is exceedingly context dependent. So an isolated, like, structural understanding of what a lineage is also kind of isolates the stem cell from its environment. And in fact, the notion of a stem cell makes no sense at all, separate from its environment. That's the lesson of stem cell experiments. The basic principle of all stem cell experiments is manipulating the sensitivity to features of the local environment. That's just what the stem cell experiments are doing. They move them out of an organism, they move them out into another context, they measure behavior of a cell in different contexts. So it's manipulating context dependence of cells, including stem cells. That's the entire principle on which they're individuated. Now, so that's that kind of traditional static understanding of a lineage process loses that aspect that I think is really crucial and central to the whole experimental approach of identifying stem cells. Now, those aren't in principle demonstrations that there could not be a structural or substantivist understanding of stem cells. In a way, it's kind of a challenge that a really dedicated substantivist would probably be delighted to try and meet. And so there's no categorical, I don't have a categorical argument that rules out a structural or static interpretation of the lineage model. I think it is possible to think of self-renewing stem cells as a stable cell type occupying that position in the lineage that's just causally able to produce other stem cells. You could try to save the structuralist model by just thinking of the lineage model instead of as this active generative process. Think of it as a set of causal relations between stable entities, cell types. That could be, and a lot of scientists actually do think of them as this way. So I don't think I've categorically said anything that rules that out. And that interpretation foregrounds the cells rather than the processes. It gives priority to the cells and just talks about causal relations between them that generate a lineage. So there you would just have a model of different types of or populations of cells connected by causal relations. And there are, I think, two reasons not to prefer that, but again, those aren't categorical arguments against it. The two reasons are, again, the point that I just made, that view of stable cell populations linked by causal relations lends itself to a mistake, thinking of stem cells as independent from the influences of their environment, when in fact, nearly everything about a stem cell is going to rely on coordination and interaction with a very specific environment. So that substantivist impression of a lineage model would encourage the mistake of thinking of stem cells as independent of their environment in a way that all the experimental work goes against. Now, a process interpretation in which a stem cell is actively generating a lineage with a more or less precisely specified tree structure is just a lot more consonant with the experimental practices by which we individuate stem cells. We always see the process, the generative process is always happening in an environment and by means of, in fact, manipulating the environment. Now, the second reason to prefer a process interpretation of the lineage model, it's not using exactly the same set of argument, but just the idea of cells related causally to other cells is too limited. And the notion of experiments in stem cells also, I alluded to this earlier, the notion of a stem cell also includes organisms as sources and as developmental products. So this is the next part of the talk, and I'm going to go kind of quickly here so that there's some time for Q&A. But I already mentioned this, the source organism is one way that stem cells are related to organisms. Every stem cell, no matter what its variety, is derived from a particular context within a multicellular organism of a particular species and multicellular stage. The context of an organism is at the starting point anyway. You don't have stem cells without that first notion of an organismal context. They're identified either within the organism or through in vitro processes descended from the source of organism. But on the other end, and this is where things start to get even closer to the definition of a stem cell, because again, their significance is in what they can become developmentally, organisms are also implicated in stem cells' developmental potential. The gold standard for determining stem cell potential, going back to the first quantitative assay in 1961, is to regenerate part of a whole organism. It's usually a mouse. For ethical reasons, we don't do this in humans. We can't use the gold standard for human stem cells, and so there's a great deal of interest in the medical applications, primarily in human ones. What happens in testing the developmental potential for human stem cells is using proxies for the whole organism. We don't take a part out of an adult human and then see if a stem cell line can replace it. Instead, we use these experimental proxies, and this is the second part of the argument that I think looking at the array of these developmental proxies for a whole organism actually reveal a lot of important features of organismal organization. You can actually use the array of experimental methods to dissect out some features of organismal organization that link the cell and organism. So thinking again of that as a transformation between clump of cells to an organism instead of these very different layers of structural entities. So here's the collection of the main methods. The first two are the gold standards for testing developmental potential of human and other stem cell types. The second two, organoids and embryo-like structures or gastroids, are new experimental products that are actually applications of stem cell potential. They're not, so these are different experiments, but they all illustrate developmental potential of stem cells involving aspects of organisms or proxies for an organism. So I'm going to kind of quickly go through these main ideas and then conclude with a generalization from this. So the first of these, embryoid bodies, are a variant of what happens when you grow human embryonic stem cells on a plate. So that first method that I went over, you've taken stem cells out of an early embryo, human embryo, grow them on two-dimensional plates. If you float them up in media, so all you do is detach them from the surface they're growing on and let them float around, they form these things, these little spheres about 0.1 or 0.2 millimeters in diameter, varying sizes, but not too much variation. And they consist of an inner core of undifferentiated stem cells, and they're wrapped in a layer of more differentiated stem cells. All you do is change one feature of the environment, their physical connections to the surface. If they're floating around, they form these stable spheres, presumably in response to thermodynamic constraints. That's the general assumption. And you initiate a very early stage of differentiation. You don't have only stem cells. You have a layer of more differentiated cells wrapped around an inner layer of stem cells. And that's used as a proxy for the whole organism. The potential of those inner cell layers is used as an indicator of you're able to create something like the whole embryonic structure. So it's a really simplified version of early embryonic development, the embryoid body. The other gold standard for determining stem cell potential goes back to the very first pluripotent stem cells. These were cancer cells, actually. So the teratocarcinomas are these upsetting tumors that contain diverse specialized tissues of neural and teeth, in this case, a disorganized jumble of specialized tissues. And they were quite early on identified as a proxy for the embryo back in the early 1960s. And it turns out that they also contain a central layer of undifferentiated cells in the middle as well. So the way this works in current practice is taking human stem cells, inject them into a strain of mouse that does not reject the cells immunologically, they're immunocompromised. It instead allows those stem cells to grow as tumors within mice. So you're testing stem cell potential by actually causing them to produce tumors of this sort. And those particular tumors will contain a jumble of specialized cells. If all of the germ layers are represented, that's taken to be evidence that, yes, those stem cells were pluripotent, because they can produce all of the different major cell types in the adult body, but they do it in a really disorganized way. So this is a case where you can reveal some features of organismal organization by their absence. What's missing from these? You've got specialized cell types, but they're not organized in anything like the way a whole organism is going to have. Organoids are actually a step past this, and this is much more recent. They're a new kind of biological entity. They're a collection of organ-specific cell types developed from stem cells or progenitors. And so the way they're produced is by taking human pluripotent stem cells, so again, out of those two-dimensional plates, and seeding them on a three-dimensional scaffold, a synthetic scaffold that puts those just regular old pluripotent stem cells into a particular arrangement, and then give them a media bath that approximates the conditions for development of that organ. And you end up with a kind of simplified but functionally capable mini organ or proto organ. And they've done this with the optic cup, the brain, they have little mini brains floating around in the dish there, the liver, kidney, stomach, pancreas, and there's more. There's a longer list ever producing. So this is a new application of stem cell technology. It's not a test of stem cell pluripotency so much as seeing that undifferentiated cells, when given a set of specific signals, not particularly elaborate signals, and put in a three-dimensional arrangement, will then differentiate into the cell types that you would expect to see in the mature organ and exhibit some kind of function associated with the organ. So it's not going to behave exactly like the whole organ, but you end up with at least a simplified in vitro approximation of organ function. So what that is going to vary enormously depending on what the organ is. So you can get stem cells to produce these organ-like structures, again, by manipulating their three-dimensional arrangement and a few of the chemical signals they get. Now, an even more dramatic example of this is the embryoid structures. This is the last one I'll discuss. This prompts pluripotent stem cells to organize into the rudiments of a body plan. And so all they do is they let them grow on their plate, but they confine them to grow in a small circle. So they grow to meet the edges of that little defined circle, and then they have to sort of double up on each other. They're stuck. They then develop a radial symmetry. You end up with stemness high at the center and declining as you go out, and you get a really robust, organoids aren't particularly robust actually in terms of the spatial relationships between cell types, but you get a very robust arrangement of a symmetrical center to periphery, stemness in the middle and more differentiated cells on the outside. And there's a pretty robust appearance and timing, and you can change the size and get the same predictable array of layers of differentiation. And so they think of this as, again, resembling an embryo, but not the early stage embryo. It actually resembles the gastroid. The gastroid, which is the stage that's associated with individuation at the organismal level. No more twinning is possible at this stage. So it's not an anatomical relationship, because the mode of symmetry is completely different. But in terms of the cell types that appear and the robustness of it and the nature of the symmetry, this is the other name for these embryo-like structures is a gastroloid. So it's actually been suggested that they shouldn't be allowed to continue experiments like this because they violate the 14-day rule about creating human embryos after the two-week limit. They're very artificial, so it's a controversial claim, but this is another new way of generating features of organismal organization, again, out of just plain old human embryonic stem cells. So you're able to get key features of organismal organization and aspects of development that implicate the organism out of arranging different the cell undifferentiated stem cells in a chemical environment and in a kind of different 3D or 2D relationships. And so these are the features that start to look more and more significant for initiating these aspects of development. Okay. So last little point is back to that original kind of stem cell experimental design. The traditional way of testing a lot of stem cell pluripotency is just single cell conditions to make one particular cell type. It's neurons and muscle cells, and I think these are, those are blood cells in the middle. And so you can actually think about those directed differentiation experiments as a thoroughly disarticulated, like absent any organismal organization way of thinking about development. So this is in some ways the really minimal notion about the cell potential of pluripotent stem cells to create all separately all of the different cell types that make up the organism. So what I've been doing lately is putting all of these together. They don't form any kind of continuum. There's no kind of, none of the scientists argue this. They actually argue quite the opposite. This is an array of modes of development. And so we can put these diverse experiments and their in vitro products together to get a picture of the different kinds of development that can emanate from stem cells. You've got the teratocarcinoma formation that's a pathological counterpart, a disorganized counterpart to normal development. You've got really simplified, minimal models of both early and later embryonic development. You've got the completely fragmented spatiotemporally dispersed reflection of normal development with directed differentiation. And you've got kind of proto-organs in these different organoids. So I've started to use the term developmental versatility to refer to that extension of the concept of stem cell potential. Because it's not just about the kinds of cell types that stem cells can make, but the kinds of organismal organization that they can or cannot produce in these different experimental conditions. So you can extend the notion of a stem cell lineage, taking the full range of experimental results into account. The notion of a stem cell lineage should be extended not only to include the source organism, but also these aspects of organismal organization that it can produce. And in the very last part of the talk, I know I'm running close to the end of time, but it's good because this is the most speculative and there's not as much to say about it. I want to extend and generalize this idea to this more inclusive general notion of development that includes stem cells but is not limited to this. And the basic idea I've been using to build this out is the notion of encapsis, which was originally proposed in 19th century German biology as a reaction against a reductionist conception of the organism as an assemblage of cells. So a traditional, when cell theory was new and cutting edge science, the organism is just an assemblage of cells. Encapsis was proposed as a pushback against this. The organism encapsulates its organs. The idea is you've got a higher level system that encapsulates, contains, encloses the lower level system. And that fits well with a lineage model of stem cells. You can think about the stem cells in a lineage that's been actively generated as creating a higher level, the tissue in this case, a higher level system that encompasses the origins. But I don't think that traditional notion of encapsis by itself is going to work as a way of articulating development inclusively. That not everything that participates in development divides and then forms a more inclusive containing system. And that whole idea of containment also sort of goes right back to the traditional structural notions that I've been trying to get away from. So here's the really speculative notion that I will conclude with. This is a new idea that I'm trying out and want to see how far I can work it. So the idea is not to take that traditional notion of encapsulation, but the related one of forming a boundary between an entity and its environment. So you can conceptualize the different layers or scales of the developmental process as related by this formation of a boundary. That is the process of separating an entity from its environment. And it's a kind of multi-layered notion in the sense that you have an entity separated from its environment at one layer, and then you always look down one layer. And at the lower level, there's going to be an interactive, complicated network, an ongoing process that's linked to that boundary but doesn't itself instantiate it. So the boundary is something that's related to an ongoing kind of interactive network. It's a really tempered view, I guess, of the way to think about entities in development as bounded from environments but continuously engaged with that environment such that even at the lower level, it doesn't really even make any sense to think about the boundary. So let me cash this out slightly more. The organoid example is going to be helpful here because that's one of the ways I've been sort of thinking this through. stem cell researchers explain this process of how we get a proto-organ out of undifferentiated stem cells as a kind of self-assembly process. So a lot of the language of the biologists actually suggests a kind of autonomy, and that might be a little bit misleading. But they analyze this notion of self-assembly, self-organization into two processes: cell sorting out and spatially restricted lineage commitment. And what those mean, the sorting out is just adhesion between matching surface molecules into a thermodynamically stable pattern. So you've got physical constraints and molecular interactions. And lineage commitment just means you shift from a stem cell state into something else. It's just another word for differentiation, but it's constrained by the spatial relationships. So what I think is happening with organoids is an artificial boundary is getting imposed on the system. And similarly with embryo-like bodies, you impose a boundary, it's this little circle they have to grow in. It's a more sophisticated three-dimensional artificial scaffold. The stem cells are seated on it. That sets up interactions among the cells and their surface molecules together with physical forces that commit the cells to develop along particular pathways. That seems to be what initiates the differentiation events that gives us the organ-like organization. So the scaffold is constraining cell fate. And at that level, you can think about the organoid as something distinct from its environment. But if you go down to the lower level picture, you have as an ongoing network of cells and signaling factors and the extracellular matrix and mechanical forces and oxygen levels and pH and a whole list of complicated ongoing interactions that are happening in the system. And so the boundary is constraining the interactants at a lower, at a higher level, but then at the lower level you have this continuing, ongoing set of interactions that aren't bounded from the environment. So embryoid bodies, I think, are much the same. We can think about an entity separate from its environment participating in these developmental processes, but only relative to first a complex environment in its own right, and then at the lower level, an ongoing set of processes. And let's see, I'm gonna run out of time. I think I wanna close with this by trying to apply this to the notion of a cell, what I started with, like the most characteristic, unambiguous biological individual. And I think this is actually a view that fits pretty well for thinking about cell individuals, even the other cells, that cell types that stem cells could give rise to. One hand, we have an entity that's clearly bounded from its environment. You've got this topological individuality by the enclosing membrane. And yet when you look at the lower layer, you've got this just ongoing set of interactions across that membrane. In fact, the membrane itself, there's no boundary at the lower layer that makes any sense. And so I think I want to extend that notion of the entity bounded from its environment as the basic conception of development and just apply that to all of the layers. Here's the really messy diagram. You've got the network representation of what's going on at lower layers, what's going on at the cell lineage, and then applying the network representation to tissues and organs and then the whole organism. There's nothing in principle that lets you stop with the whole organism. That's just sort of where developmental biology tends to stop. But that picture of entities in relation to their environment as part of these ongoing interactive network processes is the view that I'm trying to play with now. And so I've extrapolated enormously to this from the starting point of stem cell experiments. But let's see. Yeah, that's where I'll stop. There's the concluding summary is just the recap of the main points that I've gone over. I've tried to build out a really inclusive picture of development that I think is a processual one, a multi-layered or multi-strata of processes. Again, I don't think it's a hard argument that development is a process, but we haven't really had a good inclusive picture of it rather than the detailed processes happening at all these different levels. So this is my first pass at an inclusive framework for thinking about development in a way that allows us to talk about the entities, but only relative to the ongoing lower level network of interactions and in relation to their environments, always at the even at the focal level of where you're talking at an entity. It's going to be in relation to a complex environment, so embedded in that aspect of it. So I will stop there. Thank you. Sorry that ran on a little bit long.
Do we have time for
a couple
questions?
Yeah,
Yeah.
Can you thanks. That was interesting. I guess I'm really going to a very basic question, because I didn't know that how much it bears on what you're actually saying, but I wasn't quite sure what a stem cell was.
Well, that's probably good, actually, because I don't think there's a simple answer except the generic one. Yeah.
I mean, so sometimes it seems as if you were saying stem cell was the lineage process, but other times you said definitely it was the initiating event.
Right. No, I think
if you say it's the initiating event, then of course I take it that every node in the tree is initiating something. Right? So.
Yes, but you then, can, and that's absolutely right.
But then just the last third option, which I'm almost tempted with, is it would be, there are stem cells. There are stem cells, there are lineage processes with cells.
No, and actually.
And there are stem processes, or more stemmy kinds of processes.
Okay, good.
But anyway, those are the options that I wasn't sure of.
And I think that ambiguity, there's actually a good reason for it. It's a sloppiness in the way that I presented it, but if you were giving a full-throated ontological, metaphysical account of a stem cell, I think what you would want is all of those to be included. And in fact, those represent positions in the community as to how we should conceptualize these things. So here's the part where, why is it not a problem to say, I'm not really clear on what a stem cell is after your talk. As a philosophical account that's very closely grounded in the scientific practice, that's a good thing if all I'm doing is articulating, here's the state of the science right now. In fact, a lot of researchers would argue there is no stem cell. There's the property of stemness, and we have to think of it as something that can be, a cell can enter or leave, in ways that depend heavily on the environmental signals that you get. And that there's a lot to that idea. I don't want to completely write off the idea that a stem cell also is a cell that we can use some traditional cellular biology ways of analyzing. And so I also want to allow for a more traditional way of understanding the stem cell, which is why I'm like, oh, it's this, I wouldn't say initiating event, but I want to say it's a thing that's also a generative, if it's an entity, it's a generative entity. And you have to understand it in relation to both its environment and the processes and the developmental processes that it can initiate. Like, that's literally the general definition of a stem cell. And so I guess I'd want to allow for an array of metaphysical possibilities there, partly because I don't want to take a position on that. I haven't tried to. And also reflecting the arguments in the stem cell community about whether or not we should think of them as anything like a stable entity. They're not stable in anything like the traditional sense. So I guess I would push back on only the very, very traditional, like, stable, autonomous entity. And yet you still do have people talking about stem cells like that. So I guess I want to show that there's a way that makes sense, but it has to be qualified really, really heavily. I would, I guess, say that they're not the whole lineage process if we think of it as a thing, straight up. If they're things, they're generative, active things that give rise to these developmental pathways. But there's going to be a lot more to give a clear metaphysical account of that is a long way from what I've provided.
Very quick question. Much of what you said about stem cells seems to apply to earlier things in biology. One might say germplasmness, one might even to Neolithic technology.
Oh, and that's so interesting. Rightly so, because it's the thing that gives rise to, maybe the cell lineage pathway thing might be more specific, but the idea of a stem, and this, the idea originates with Haeckel, like what doesn't in biology. And it's a stem cell was, again, it's the ur cell, the source of all the other ones. And so in that sense, there's going to be some conceptual continuity with anything that has that property, a seed for something that grows. I guess I would, because of my attachment to this lineage notion, I would say something that can be represented as a lineage would be closer than to the stem cell as understood scientifically. But if you loosen up that, like, have that notion of a generative starting point, then yeah, absolutely, there's going to be a lot of things that would fit that picture.
Thank you.
Sorry that ran long.